the Radio Hustle with Alexis Conran, enemy of the con man on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the show with me, Alexis Conran. We're talking scams and cons till about 3 o'clock. If you're looking to buy an engagement ring or a diamond ring, you better stay tuned because we're going to be talking diamonds for the rest of the hour. If you want to ask any questions, give us a call here on 08444991000 is the number you need. Or you can text us, text TALK and your message to 87222. You can always tweet us at Talk Radio, at The Radio Hustle, or at Alexis Conran with any questions. So before the break, we heard that, we had a bit of a controversy. Steve Nightingale was telling us that the diamonds are not actually as rare as we think, and that probably emeralds are more rare and more valuable, I guess. But then again, we heard from Jacques, who was in Petra Diamonds, who are a big mining company in South Africa, saying that they are actually quite rare. But what else we discovered was that a company called De Beers, who you probably have heard of, control 95% of the diamond trade, which, hey, look, I look at hustles around the world, and anyone who controls 95% of anything, to me, seems a little bit, anti-competitive. So there's one company controlling 95% of all the diamonds that we have. And also we found out something I didn't know, that synthetic diamonds are around. And I always assumed that synthetic diamonds were sort of perspex or glass or a bit crap, really. But it turns out that they're almost as good as the real thing, because they're made, the process is sort of speeding up nature a little bit. And I'm reliably informed that you can't tell the difference between them unless you really, really know what you're talking about. So joining me in the studio to shed a little bit of light on everything is a man who's actually written a book about picking the right engagement ring, and we'll get onto that in a minute. But his name is Lewis Malka, and he's a Hatton Gardens jeweller. The book is called The Engagement Ring, and I'm reliably informed he's a man who knows a thing or two about diamonds. Lewis, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Alexis. Good afternoon.
So what do you reckon what you've heard so far? I know you've been listening in. Let's solve this. Are diamonds this rare bit of carbon that we're all, you know, believing it to be?
I don't believe they're as rare as we're led to believe that they are.
Okay.
I think that, yes, De Beers had, and I use the word had, a hold of about 95% of the world's diamonds up until, I think, 15 years ago, when De Beers decided that they were going to start selling off parts of their business.
Okay.
And I think they only hold about 35-40% of the world's diamonds now. But if you think about it, it still sounds like a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And you're wondering why the price of diamonds hasn't come down. It's because I would have thought everyone's working together to try and regulate the price and to keep them as they are, keep them stable.
And is it true that when De Beers did have that 95%,
mm-hmm,
what they would do is get the diamonds out of the ground, mine them, but then hold them back, so the market was constantly starved for the demand, the supply and demand? They were unbalancing that. There was a huge demand, but the supply, they would starve it, so there'd be a very small supply. Is that true?
Well, that's what we're led to believe. I mean, diamond mining, from what I know, started really turn of the 19th to 20th century, you know. So you've got a lot of people that was almost like the gold rush, where they've headed to South Africa, these small families, and they've gone down, they've gone to try and mine the ground. And mining back then was literally digging a hole as far as you could. We didn't have the machinery that we had, so they'd make these little contraptions to try and dig down far. And the financiers were English banks, and they'd go over to South Africa and they'd see that all these different independent entrepreneurs were trying to set up their own diamond business because they've just discovered the diamond. And what they'd do is they'd buy them all out. And by buying them all out, it controlled and regulated the market. And this became known as the De Beers Group.
I see.
So
okay,
that's where it all started.
So they all
from
grouped together.
Pretty much.
Which is natural. And
yeah.
I mean, it happens in other commodities as well.
Correct.
But the strange thing about diamonds is, for example, gold is on the stock market.
Yep.
Other commodities are on the stock market. Diamonds are not.
No.
And it's very difficult for me as a regular Joe to go and buy direct from a wholesaler.
Correct. I mean, the reason that diamonds aren't on the stock market is because, to my knowledge, there's about 16,000 different characteristics of diamond.
I see.
You're not
okay.
just looking at a round stone or a square stone or a diamond as it is. You've got the colours and clarity. You've got the different proportions, the polish cut symmetry, whether there's fluorescence, and all these factors that I've just mentioned that you're looking at me like, what the heck is that? It's no, because those are the different... different characteristics that go into pricing. Those are aside from the four C's.
Aside from those.
So if you're looking at the four C's,
which let's tell people what they are. It's clarity.
Yep.
Color.
Cut.
And
carat.
Carat. Which, carat is the size, isn't it?
Well, the weight.
The weight. Okay. Clarity is how clear are they? How brilliant.
The color is the
white. If it's brilliant white or kind of yellowish, and then the cut.
Cut. Generally the shape. But we tend to look at it as how well it's cut. So the proportions, the symmetry.
Okay.
And for argument's sake, a GVS1 can have a price range going from, for a one carat stone, going from maybe $3,000 a carat all the way up to maybe $9,000-$10,000 a carat.
But that's just way too wide.
But that's because you can have a stone that's really deep and doesn't give you anything
back,
or really shallow.
You're getting into sort of art world here, where a painting can be worth tens of thousands to one person, but hardly anything to somebody else.
I mean, although the difference is that the price will be the same to everyone for that particular cut and clarity.
But you say that, yes, it'll be the same to everyone. But there was a, and I'm looking at my Priceonomics book, which is a great book. I'd highly recommend it. But they were saying there was a study in 1977, a jewellery industry magazine asked a number of dealers to value a diamond. Mm-hmm. Their valuations varied by over 100%. So you're getting people, you know, whose job it is to sell diamonds, valuing something half or double.
Well, in the late 70s, there's what we call as the rap list. Martin Rappaport, gentleman, an American guy, he brought out the rap list, which tried to structure the way that
the
diamonds
valuing.
Are priced okay. for the trade. And if you'd asked anybody back then, diamond dealers I'm talking about, not jewellers as in retailers,
okay,
I'm talking about diamond dealers, people who've been brought up in the trade and understand the price of diamonds as it is, they wouldn't want the list because of a number of reasons, for and against. But ultimately, if you ask them to give you a value of a stone, they would come back and say, yeah, that's the value, and that would marry up with the price list.
Okay.
So it's like anything. It depends who you ask to get the answer that you want to hear.
Now, here's the thing. I've read and heard that if you walk into a jeweler's and you buy a diamond ring and then you go back in, let's say your girlfriend dumped you a week later. She didn't like it. It wasn't big enough. Okay. The stone.
Of course.
And you go back to sell it, they won't buy it back off you because the markup on diamonds is huge. I mean, we're talking about 100 to maybe sometimes 300%. We're being overcharged by what the stone is actually worth. So I've read stories of big jewelers who don't want to buy back because they don't want to insult the customer because he's come in and spent X thousands of pounds. They can't say, well, actually, if we were to buy it back, it's only going to cost about a couple of grand, even though you've handed over like 8 or 10. So why is there that huge discrepancy? Why are we paying more, way more than what the stones are actually worth?
Well, wouldn't a similar thing happen if you bought a brand new car from a showroom?
Not to that extent.
You'd definitely lose about 30% on that.
You do, but not. But you're talking about 30%. I'm talking about 100%. You know,
okay.
I'm talking about a huge cut in price.
Well, I don't know necessarily exactly how much each retailer puts on as a profit. I do know that there is a large profit.
Yes.
But then you could look at the clothing industry where they put 700-800% on for the actual cost of making the garments, having it shipped over, and then putting it on the shelves in the high street.
Of course. And diamonds have the history of it takes a lot to mine them, etc. You have to know how to cut it. A diamond, I've heard, can be easily ruined by someone who doesn't cut it properly.
Correct.
So I can understand the stories, but we know that they're not as rare as we are being told they are. And the markup seems to be taking advantage of what I want to come to, because I know that we talked about it earlier when we bumped into each other, was this whole story that we have been told about buying a diamond for an engagement ring especially around engagement, how much that diamond's going to needs to be worth. And there's a certain gentleman who was Mr. Oppenheimer, wasn't he? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He was. Tell me, you know more about him. Was he? Oh, he's looking at the book. He's looking at the note. No. So Mr. Oppenheimer was head of the De Beers Group in the 30s.
Yes.
And they. And this is the bit that I think is a bit genius, and why I have a terrible habit of admiring hustlers. And to me. And again, no legal claims. I'm looking over behind there. I'm not calling De Beers hustlers, but they did something that was genius. They sold something that's not worth as much as it, you know, as much as they say it is, by making people believe a narrative. And they did that with the help of Madison Avenue, by advertisers. They went to advertisers and realized, well, hang on, we're not going to sell diamonds for their worth. We're going to sell diamonds as a status symbol. Which means it doesn't matter how much it's worth. It doesn't matter.
No, that's exactly what they did.
And they convinced people. I think back then it was the advertising campaign basically drummed it into every young man that they should spend a month's salary on the engagement ring, which I think years later went to 2 months' salary, which meant that each lady can show off her diamond ring. But actually what that diamond ring was saying is, how rich is the man I'm going to marry? It had nothing to do with the value of the stone. It had everything to do with that status symbol. And that's the genius bit, I think.
100%. I mean, I see this every day. I'm in a unique position where not only do I trade in diamonds, but I actually hand make the pieces of jewellery for my clients. And I specialise in engagement rings. So when I've got couples coming in and I've got him telling me he's got X amount of money to spend, and I show them some diamonds that will relate to that, and then she's going, have you got anything bigger?
Oh, killer.
Part of me's thinking, well, how long is this marriage going to last?
Look, Lewis, stay there. We're going to pick it up.
Okay.
We're going to pick it up straight after the break.